Today's podcast is brought to you by our friends at Stuart McDonald. They don't give me a script. They just tell me to talk about their products, and that is really easy for me. Their products show up in a lot of Fretboard Journal features. Whether you are a repair person, a luthier, or just a guitar enthusiast, if you head over to StuMac.com, I'm sure you will find something intriguing that you may need to add to your arsenal. I know a lot of guitar collectors go for those inspection mirrors so that they can see how sloppy their braces have been glued or if there are any signatures under their tops. I know a lot of people just go to StuMac.com to watch the cool videos that Eric Coleman and Dan Erlewine produce pretty regularly. They have so much stuff, I won't even tell you about specific products, but if you are into guitars and need a part or just want to see what products await you in the world of guitar setup and repair, head on over there, and if you order anything, tell them that Jason from the Fretboard Journal sent you. Hey everyone, this is Jason Verlinde, the publisher of the Fretboard Journal, and this is our 109th podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you so much for subscribing to this podcast via iTunes or Stitcher or however you consume your podcasts. And thank you so much for checking out the Fretboard Journal magazine. That is our bread and butter and our little baby, and Derek Trucks is on the cover of the next one, which will be mailing very soon. So today, we are continuing with our talks with T. Drew Heininen, young up-and-coming builder from Minnesota. Drew has worked with Jim Olsen, he's worked with Dana Bourgeois, and he's building us a guitar. And I don't know if you guys have ever experienced this, but this is probably the third custom guitar I've ordered, and there are always, as the customer, some shades of doubt, some pangs of regret, some questioning of, did I pick the right woods? Did I pick the right style? I've found over time that when the guitar actually shows up, it always exceeds my expectations, but I've also found that ordering a custom guitar can be a very stressful process. And our process was made a little bit stressful because we got this really wide variety of woods that we were either given or bought. And I wanted to make a guitar that was largely domestic woods. And there were just a lot of variables. And so as you will hear, I'm talking to Drew. I'm asking him what I should be doing. He's telling me his advice. We get into it. If you guys have any stories about custom guitars you've ordered, I would love to hear them, and I would actually love to make them a podcast. So the easiest way to get your voice on this podcast would be to open your iPhone and record a voice memo and just email it to me at jason@fretboardjournal.com, and hopefully it doesn't take 20 or 30 minutes, but I'd love to hear any lessons you've learned from having ordered custom guitars from luthiers, any pitfalls, anything you want to share with us. Try to email that to me. I would love to hear those, and I would love to share them on this podcast. And Drew and I are going to be talking, and I know these interviews that you're about to hear happened a few weeks ago. He is hard at work on this guitar, and it's going to be ready at the Fretboard Summit in October down in San Diego. So hopefully some of you will be able to attend and try this guitar out and see what you think of T. Drew Heininen's OM creation for us with largely domestic woods. Without further ado, here is Drew. Again, thanks so much for listening to us on the Fretboard Journal podcast, and thank you so much for subscribing to the Fretboard Journal magazine over at fretboardjournal.com. Thanks.
Hello.
Hey, Drew, it's Jason.
Hi, Jason.
How's it going?
Good, good. How are you?
Good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Excellent.
So we mailed you a bunch of packages.
Yes. They have all made it here safely, and I have got to celebrate Christmas several times in the past couple weeks.
So folks know we sent you way more than is needed for one guitar.
Yes.
Do you want to walk through, since I haven't even seen all of this wood, do you want to walk through, I guess we could start with the backs first and sides?
Yeah. Yeah, there are three sets of back and sides. There's a set of Koa that you picked up, I believe, from Gurian, Michael Gurian.
That was the last acquisition, yeah.
Yes. And that is a crazy-looking set of figured, curly. It has some curl around the outside and some crazy grain patterns along the center of it.
It reminded many people on our Facebook of various anatomical parts.
Right. And we can steer clear of that. Yeah. Keep this family friendly. I liked the description of the ace of spades.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's a set of walnut, which is, it has some curl to it, definite, some gentle curl, but it's a beautiful set. It has some sapwood down the center of it. And then there's a set of black locust, which it's the first time I've ever gotten a chance to see it hands-on.
It's not very black.
No, not at all. It is very, very light. It's almost like oak in the coloring. But that's very straight-grained. And it's really stiff and dense and resonant.
Now, as someone who knows what he's doing when you can tap tone these guitar woods, you know, what were your reactions off the bat? And then we'll get to the visuals later.
Yeah, I think that I was really surprised with the Black Locust. I think that was the first one that really jumped out at me. That it's very responsive and alive. It has, right now it's a little bit thicker still. It hasn't been milled down as far as the koa and the walnut. So I think that keeps the frequency in the higher range, the higher frequencies there, a little bit more. But still, it's got a really strong ping to it of higher frequencies, but then there's a lower rumble to it as well, the bass frequencies coming out of it. And it has a good sustain, so it rings out. The walnut, I would say, is kind of the... Of these woods, it's the farthest in the opposite direction as far as just not having as much of the sustain. It's also, at this point, the thinnest wood that we have. And so I think that as you thin the boards out, they're going to drop in frequency. And so you get a little more of the bass response and lower tap tone to it, but then as you put your braces on, you'll bring that back up.
And just so I know, because this is kind of Luthery 101, but when people get these sets and they're on eBay or, you know, various suppliers have them, how much thinning, how much adjusting of the actual thickness do you as a luthier typically do to whatever comes in the mail?
Yeah, it kind of depends on the supplier and what thickness they have it at when they send it to you. And so these sets are all at varying thicknesses when they arrived. So the Black Locust being a thicker set, I'm just naturally going to be taking more off of that to get it down to final thickness. Generally, I have kind of a spec range that I like to bring my backs down to, my sides to, my tops to, and that'll range about maybe the wide plus minus range on that would be 10 thousandths either way. Mm-hmm. So about 20 thousandths of an inch variation from guitar to guitar, but that's kind of going to be dictated by the wood, by how stiff it is naturally, and what the guitar's going to be kind of meant for. So I generally kind of try to get it to a certain thickness before I brace it up. And then when I brace it, you're adding the wood on, and then you shape the braces back down. So you're taking wood away again. And then after the body all comes together, you still have a chance of doing some more sanding on the body to do some kind of final thicknessing of your top and back plate. But at that point, it's pretty minimal the amount of wood that you're taking off.
Okay. And what'd you think of the koa?
I thought the koa kind of fell in between the walnut and the black locust, in that it didn't have the same sustain that the black locust did, and it didn't have the same sort of ping to it. But I would classify it as having a little bit more of that than the walnut. I'd say it's a medium, kind of a medium density koa. I'd say the area around where the spade is in the center of it is actually the area where it's the least dense. And with all that kind of weird grain in there, it loses a little bit of its stiffness in that area.
Okay.
Relative out near the outside and near the top where it has straighter grain that's running parallel, that's where the stiffness really is in this piece of wood. And so I haven't had a chance to put a template on this yet to see where the body would will exactly fall on it. But ideally, for the acoustical properties, I would be trying to maximize that straighter grain stuff, the stiffer area of the set. We'd lose a little bit of the crazy grain figure, but there's a lot of kind of curl figure out in that area that we'd actually be getting into.
Okay. And I'll post photos of all these backs and sides and tops and this whole stash so folks can see what exactly you're talking about. Should we talk about tops before we get your advice on all this?
Sure. We can dive into the tops. There are three tops that arrived as well. The first top that arrived was a red spruce top. It is super tight grained. Mm-hmm. Most red spruce, I would say, is not this tight grained. I counted it averages around 25 grains per inch.
Mm-hmm.
I usually think of that as being more of kind of a Sitka, like a really tight grained Sitka spruce. You get up into that range. It's super stiff. It has a great tap tone. It does have character, as people in the industry often say. It has some coloration to it. The grain width does vary across the set, but it sounds great. It's nice and stiff and light. Then we have a set of Lutz spruce, which is a hybrid, I believe, of Sitka and black spruce. It is probably of these sets visually the most perfect set.
Okay.
It has just gorgeous, beautiful, great, straight, even grain to it. I think that when it gets cleaned up, it's going to have a lot of medullary rays, and it's going to be a beautiful set of wood. It has a nice tap tone. All of these tops have nice tap tones to them. It's really stiff along the grain a little bit. Not quite as stiff across the grain as the red spruce. It was in the range of like a 12 to 20 grains per inch. So a little bit less than the red spruce top. And that's probably where that the flexibility across the grain comes from.
And are the more grains the better in general?
Generally, yeah. That's they tend to be stiffer. But that's, I wouldn't say it's a total rule, because when I think of red spruce, I generally think of somewhere around the range of like 10 to 15 grains per inch.
Okay.
Which isn't that many relative to some other spruces, and yet that's often considered one of the better options for a top. So,
and is the grain, sorry, this is total basic stuff, but I'm apparently ignorant about it. Does the grain, is it literally just how old the tree was when it was cut, or is there more going on with the grain?
Well, there's yes and no. I mean, there's a lot. It's not just the age of the tree. It's also how it was milled. And how the tree grew throughout its lifetime. So the wider the grain, the quicker the tree grew. They're actually able to date trees or date wood based on knowing the cycle of the seasons and what years had good growing seasons and what years didn't, and they can look at each subsequent grain line on a piece of wood and know that, okay, this is this year, this based on how they size out relatively from the center of the tree. But each species kind of has its own growth pattern, how much sunlight it has, how much rain falls. There's some people prefer to get to have their wood sourced from a tree that grew on a north-facing slope because it would have less sunlight, and so the growth rings are tighter together.
Okay.
Whether that is really holds true or not is certainly up for debate.
I don't know if any of these were cut via full moon either, so that was a whole other issue.
Right. So hopefully that doesn't hinder us going forward. Right.
And then what was the third top?
Yeah, the third top is a torrified Sitka spruce top. It has probably, out of these, it definitely has the widest grains. I counted around 8 to 12 grains per inch. And I'm guessing this is a product of the torrefaction process, a result of that, but it has incredible sustain. I think that is the thing that really jumped out at me the most of in this top, is that it just continues to ring on after tapping it. But again, it's a fairly stiff top, lightweight, and it's a little bit darker in color as a result of the torrifying process. But yeah, I'd say all three of these tops are pretty stellar in their own right.
Yeah, and I should say the red spruce came from the East Coast. It came from the Hampton Brothers, and they are on eBay, and they have their website, and they have been learning the art of harvesting red spruce from John Arnold, who is a guy that has the respect of a lot of people in the industry, and he actually recommended them to me. That's how we found that top. And then the Torrified Sitka and the Lutz both came from our friends at Pacific Rim Tone Woods up in Concrete, Washington. We did a film about them that's on YouTube, and Steve McMinn was also at the Fretboard Summit, and so it was nice to get some tops from them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then we had a whole bunch of other stuff in there. You almost have enough to build a guitar, right?
Yeah, we're just about there.
Okay. So looking at all this stuff, and this is probably exactly the wrong way this is probably the way you'd least like to build a guitar, is just to get a bunch of random parts and have to put them together as though they were meant to be. But what combos, you know, what combo are you leaning towards if you were to lean towards one? I'm assuming we're not going to be able to build more than one guitar here. So what would be your preference?
Yeah, I think I really like the Koa set for back and sides. I like the Koa and the Black Locust the best.
Yep. I thought you would say that.
Yep. And that's kind of, I'm kind of, it's a toss up, a flip of the coin. I think the Black Locust is, it's intriguing. It's a wood that I don't have any experience with. And with the limited exposure that I've had to it in the last week or so, it certainly intrigues me. The Koa set is a gorgeous set. It's a well-known tone wood. I don't think that would, I don't think we would go wrong with Koa either.
On the Black Locust, which doesn't look black at all, can you do anything to it visually? Could you add a tint to it, or would you do anything to kind of darken it?
Yeah, we could certainly either give it a stain or some sort of application directly to the wood before top coating it, rather than just a terminology tinting the finish or painting the putting it spraying something over the top like a paint coat. I'd most likely do something actually staining and penetrating into the wood fiber itself, but that's certainly possible. We could make it hot pink.
Perfect. And then what was there one combination of these woods, top end, back and sides, that just seems like you're leaning towards?
I think any of these tops would work with just about any of these back and sides. I think I've kind of been thinking about them as like pairing, how I would pair them up if there were three bodies.
Okay.
That's kind of how I've just, my mind has naturally been going at it. And I think if I were to pair one, or pair each three up, I would put the red spruce on the Black Locust, and I'd put the Lutz spruce on the Koa, and I'd put the Torrified Sitka on the Walnut. That's kind of considering both the visual aesthetic of each guitar and the tonal qualities of the tops and the back and sides.
All right. And boy, decisions, decisions.
Yeah.
And then what else was before we have to make a decision? I guess I'll stall. What else did we send you? We sent you some neck material.
Yes, there's two-inch slabs of figured maple.
Will that work?
That will work. We can put some sort of a kind of decorative wood strip down the center of them, just for the visual. But they're well quartered, and we can definitely get a neck blank out of that.
Okay.
And there's also a beautiful wedge of Sitka spruce, old Sitka spruce, that we have for brace stock.
It weighed next to nothing. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah, and that as a whole wedge, I was tapping on that when it arrived, and it has a distinct tap tone to it, even as a big hunk. So,
is that normally how luthiers get their braces? Is by the wedge like that, or are there other ways?
It depends. It depends on where it's coming from. Some of the dealers, brace stock dealers, will do a little more processing and get it into more block form. But generally, it's still in some rough form like that. I've definitely pulled brace stock out of wedges like that in the past.
Nice. We sent you maple. We sent you brace stock. What else do we have? Some binding in there?
There was some purfling in there.
Okay.
Yep. Some black maple black. Standard.
Yep. And I mean, this is what happens when you work down the street from Michael Gurry and you go over there for a few odds and ends, and before you know it, he's giving you a shopping cart with Koa and maple necks and everything. So thank you, Michael.
So
Koa's guitars generally can be a little on the damper side, a little quieter, I guess.
And it kind of depends partially on the density of the Koa. That's kind of generally a good determinant of how it's going to function as a back and side set. The denser it is, the more it's going to project, and the more volume it's going to have, and the more kind of complexity it generally has. And I would grade this Koa set as kind of middle of the road. It's not super dense, but it's not not super cardboard either.
Okay. Man, this is hard. I mean, I am leaning towards, just because it riled everybody up on Facebook and Instagram, the Koa and the Lutz, you know, sounds like the winning combo. But that Black Locust sure is intriguing.
Yeah.
We did say at the beginning that we wanted a sleeper guitar that did not look like anything, and that is definitely a sleeper set of wood.
Yeah. Yeah, it's there's really nothing about it that is eye popping. It really reminds me, or it calls to mind a white oak in my mind.
Yeah.
It's very straight grained. There's no figure, really. There's no curl, color wise, it's not eye popping at this point at all, but it definitely surprised me when I tapped it. And
yeah, Well, I mean, should we be looking at any other domestic tonewoods, or do you want us to end this search?
Well, I think it would be a good idea. The sooner that we can make this decision, the better. I think that there's certainly, we have not exhausted the field, to be sure. But I think that these choices that we have, any of these will make beautiful sounding and beautiful visually.
Well, boy, I guess we're going to go Koa Lutz then.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. You have to promise me, though, that if you do use that Black Locust set, you tell us how it sounds.
Okay.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, if you get inspired and want to just build them side by side, we wouldn't complain either. But.
Yeah, I just might.
Not going to happen, I know. What else do you need from us? I mean, what are the next steps in your process?
Well, at this point, we are kind of set on the body for assembly and for getting the top plate and the back plate put together, assembled, and braced up. And then the rim can be made. The next kind of thought on the design side would be thinking about the binding. What kind of binding do we want on this? And possibly a top purfling. Mm-hmm. There's a question of a back strip, whether we want to tie that in to the binding scheme, do a wood strip or do something with purflings or various kind of design elements there.
I think you should put a little bit of the walnut in the Black Locust so we can just say that all the woods were in this guitar. but yeah, okay. We'll think about that.
And let's see. We had discussed at one point via email considerations for a fretboard.
Yeah.
So that's something that we can kind of start thinking about. It. That's something that we don't have to decide immediately, but it's a consideration to have. Start looking and thinking about options on that. And then the other thing to be considering is, and we've discussed this a little bit via email as well, but would be a case.
Yeah.
And that's generally the case suppliers have a lead time for their orders as well. They're oftentimes building their cases custom for the instrument as well, and so it can take just as long as building the instrument to build the case for it. So that's something to be mindful of as we're kind of progressing forward.
Sure. And your next steps to build this body, what kind of glue are you going to use?
I was planning on using an aliphatic, just a kind of standard tight bond.
Yep.
That's kind of my general go-to glue. If you wanted, we could go the route of using hide glue. But that's generally I tend to use tight bond. At one point we had a kind of a blind testing at Dana's shop. We built two guitars side by side through the process, and one was assembled with tight bond and the other was assembled with hide glue. And there was virtually no difference.
Interesting.
We could discern.
Yeah. I'm cool with tight bond if that's what you like. You're in charge here.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, this is exciting. How's your shop coming along?
It's exciting. I haven't been able to really make any sawdust out there yet, but we had to upgrade the electrical system on it so that all the tools will function.
Yep.
But I'm excited to be hopefully getting in there and working full-time and working and making sawdust within the next couple weeks here.
Okay. That's a couple of weeks where I can change my mind. No, just
yeah. Well, if you decide to, we're still.
I'm curious when you get these raw materials, like the koa. You know, we've talked a little bit about what we were hoping to get out of this guitar. How much in the way of adjustments in terms of thinning it, planing it, do you do, or do you just kind of get it down to like, you know, these are the raw materials I was given. I need to do this much so that it doesn't crack, and this is what it is as a guitar. I mean, is it like getting a nice steak or not getting a nice steak, and it all depends on the raw beef, or how's it work?
Yeah, I'd say that it's definitely a combination of the two. That it's kind of taking the raw material and trying to find the sweet spot. Both in the actual wood itself, and like I said, I kind of have a general thickness that I will take a back to, and then when I put the braces on, then as I'm sizing the braces down, that's more so when I start kind of tweaking the structure of it. That's where I do my minute variations, and in a top as well, is that it's the wood itself. If it's super thick, you'll thin it out a little bit more, or if it's super stiff, you'll thin it out a little bit more. If it's a little more flexible and floppy, you might leave a little more material in it. In your plate before you brace it. But you have, I mean, you could go the other way too and just take them all to the same thickness, and you could leave your braces a little bit chunkier and add your stiffness that way. So there's kind of, if you go too far or past where you wanted to in thicknessing it, and you get it a little bit too thin, you can potentially brace it back up. Hopefully you don't go too thin, or else then you can run into structural issues where it wants to crack. But usually it's surprising what a couple thousandths of an inch can do.
Interesting.
To a set of wood. So we're not talking about taking an extra eighth of an inch off.
Yeah.
Or even an extra, you know, 32nd of an inch, which is 32 thousandths.
And is that little bit that you're shaving or sanding off, is that done uniformly across the back, or do you sometimes put a little bit more heft behind the bass side? Or, I mean, does mad scientist stuff come into play here?
In the thicknessing, that is generally done on a wide belt sander, the preliminary thicknessing. And so that's going to be an even thickness, from across the length and, from end to end, from side to side. It's generally going to be the same thickness. When you brace it up, you can kind of tweak the bracing once you, both in where you put your braces. I generally use I have two different bracing patterns. One is based on the Martin bracing pattern, and the other is based on an Olson bracing pattern. And those stiffen slightly different parts of the top. Then how you shape those down, I think that's where some of the mad scientist comes in, and whether it's all science or whether it's all mad is hard to say.
All right. Well, cool, Drew. Thanks so much for checking in. We're going to post some of the photos on our Facebook of all these tops and backs so people can see exactly what we've been talking about. And look forward to talking to you again soon.
Yeah, definitely.
If you have any questions between now and when you actually start making sawdust, you know where to find us. And really excited.
Yeah, me too. I've got the Koa set and the Lutz spruce pulled out and set aside right now.
Wow. All right. It's coming together.
Yes.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Drew.
Yeah. Thank you, Jason.
Have a great week.
You too.
Bye.